There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 900. August 23rd, 2021, Nasser.
Thank you, sir, and congratulations to you for podcast number 900. And I say Japanese Grand Prix gets the Ginzo knife, Toyota gets the hibachi steak at Le Mans, and now back to Mr. Rogers, the King Escargot of podcasting.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Toyota 1-2 for the 24 Hours of Le Mans. LCH says he'd like to keep Bottas as his teammate. Russell says, it's really not a done deal yet, and I'm getting nervous. And this week's sponsor, once again, is Cafe Luna in Carmel Plaza in beautiful downtown Carmel. Thank you, Philip Pegler. Keep up the good work. Just a reminder, everyone, we need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know you want to. I want to thank Steven Jansen for his contributions. Steve, keep up the good work. We love you very, very much. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I'm doing very good, sir. Did you enjoy watching Le Mans in the rain?
I did.
That's it.
That's it. So exciting, so wonderful. I was hoping Alpine could pull it out, but in the end, it was the Toyota 1-2. I believe that Toyota needs to, I don't know, there was no competition, really. But it was fun to watch. I like to watch the new Corvettes, and there's so many different classes, 60 cars in the field. It was exciting.
Yes, sir. But, sir, coming soon at a track in the forest, our main feature, Belgian Grand Prix at Spa-Francorchamps. You remember Belinda Carlisle used to sing Heaven is a Place on Earth? This is that place for motor racing, Formula One in particular. And Mr. Rogers, you have been in the Ardennes Forest. Do you think there is a track anywhere in this world that can battle with Spa in terms of motorsports beauty?
None.
Man, I just totally agree with you. It is Garden of Eden of motor racing and very, very nice. And sir, so will be the competition on Sunday. I think it's going to be intense. It may get ugly. Time will tell. Our man, Max, had a good lead two races ago, but is again chasing the same old, the lucky and top dog of Toto. The battle for this year's championship, I think, is going to get more intense and personal in the second half. It is too close in terms of package and talent between the two. This is not like facing Buffalo Bills in the Super Bowl. Lewis and Max may have a gearbox go and lose the championship, but these are not the kind of guys who are going to miss a last-second kick. I think both will pounce on any opportunity presented or gifted, as we have seen in the last two races. What say you, sir? What are you expecting on Sunday?
Well, I think a lot of us are expecting sparks to fly, but I hate to say this, but cooler heads will prevail, and I think that Red Bull may have bit off more that they could chew in this championship because it's still LCH, it's still Toto, it's still Mercedes, and he carries around the football, as they might call it. And when LCH wants more power, LCH gets more power. So it's going to be intriguing, but I think everybody's calmed down a little bit and we're going to have a very professional demeanor in the paddock. Because at the beginning, Max is going to tell the press to effing off.
Yes, sir. Advantage before the lights go off on Sunday is, I agree with you, LCH. He is leading the championship and has experience of winning, maybe more or equally important, losing championships. You learn more from your mistakes, as they say. For Max, he has the speed and an F1 engine that is winning races. Lack of experience may be his biggest disadvantage. Now, there is one gentleman out there whose last name is not Verstappen, but also starts with V, Sebastian Vettel. He has gone on record saying he wants Max to win, so Michael's record is not broken, and I can understand his German feelings. Stakes are too high. It is important to hang on to championship lead, as the season may not see all the races run. The Delta variant may be replaced by Southwest variant, and then some races may be grounded. And I'm beginning to feel that now there is news that Qatar, low sail circuit where they do the MotoGP, they are in serious negotiations to hold a race in November. I will be very surprised if races in South America go ahead, talking Mexico and Brazil, of course, and I hope Texas goes through. Things are on shaky grounds here. So do you think we will have 23 races, Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
I think, you know, hate to borrow the phrase from Lewis again, cash is king. But we do want motor racing, you know, more the better. But I think we will have 23 if they cannot go to all the tracks they need to go. Then they can always, you know, go back to two races at Hockenheimring, two races at Nürburgring, and bring back, you know, Brands Hatch or another race at Silverstone. So it can be cramped in. But man, I was watching Le Mans. Isn't that a fabulous track for a Formula One race?
It is fantastic, but it's never really materialized. I'm just not sure why.
Well, they did one French Grand Prix, I believe, 67 on the Le Mans Bugatti circuit, which is the circuit they use for MotoGP. But I was thinking, you know, what they should do, because they closed down the street because it's a street race, as we all know, for a whole week. What they can do Sunday before the Le Mans, they can have a Formula One race. Can you imagine the crowd that will come into Le Mans if they have a Le Mans and a Formula One race the weekend before?
That would be too much excitement. It would be almost illegal.
Yes, it will be too much. And too much of a good thing is not good, they say. But they don't know about Formula One. So let's try it someday. You know, I was thinking maybe they can do a race, if need be, at Manicourt. Do you like that track?
I do, but Ralph doesn't.
Ralph doesn't?
Nope.
Okay, sir. Now we're going to move on to another hot item, which may get even hotter over the weekend. Bottas, will he get porridge or waffle in Belgium? The world is waiting for Toto to announce who will be in the court of Sir Hamilton in 2022. Prince George is everybody's darling and very deserving of a top seat. Bottas will have a seat, I think, in Formula One in life after a turbulent flight as wingman. Toto has a soft and management corner in the life and times of Valtteri Bottas. It's either Williams or race with Frederick Vasseur and his Alfa Romeo team. Valtteri and Vasseur have a championship-winning pedigree back in the GP3 days. Do you think Toto will announce who will be replacing or who will be driving for Mercedes in Belgium?
No, I don't think so. I think he's going to put it off. But let's not be too surprised if Bottas stays on.
And it's funny you say that. I was thinking that, you know, with all that hoopla going on and the whole British media going after George Russell to get the seat, we may have more of the same. But you know what is interesting? Here at F1 Weekly, we wish all the drivers all the best. What happens on the track and in life, we don't control that. But I am curious to see. I would like to see. I think George Russell has deserved this seat. Okay, and Bottas has proved time and time and again that he is not going to beat Lewis in the championship. So it's time for some new blood in the system. But I still have that question, you know, which will only George can answer, or maybe Lewis can answer on his behalf. Beating or rattling the cage of Bottas is impressive, but it will be a different cup of ramen noodle soup when he goes against Lewis. And of course, for him to rattle the cage of Lewis, it has to mean that he is in the same league as Max or Lewis. And if you are in that very rarefied field, then you are damn good, as Mr. Isaac Hayes would say. Do you think this guy, George Russell, will rattle the cage of Lewis?
No.
At least not in the first year. But, you know, hey, that's what I thought about Ricciardo and Sebastian Vettel at Red Bull. So you have to give the man an opportunity to see if he can unlock the key and make things happen. But times are very interesting, very exciting. And, of course, all happening at one of the greatest tracks on earth. So I'm very, very happy. And Mr. Rogers, what I want to do, time, circumstances, and most important, COVID circumstances allowing, I want to go to these some great tracks in Europe. I'm really getting more interested in going on a non-race weekend or even on a weekday so I can walk these tracks. You know, can you imagine walking on Eau Rouge and Poitiers, walking on Mistral? I mean, how wonderful that would be.
Very, very wonderful.
Yes, sir. Would you like to do that someday, senor?
Well, my walking isn't up to speed anymore, so maybe if I was on a motor scooter.
Yeah, well, I have the same problem, so maybe we can rent a electric scooter or something like that. But anyway, hopefully one day we'll make it. Okay, sir, next we come to the Willie Horton revolving door at Red Bull. Dr. Marco will have a hard time finding number two who can match their love child. Because if there was such a supreme talent out there, he will be numero uno at some top team. I think they should keep Checo. He is not trying to reinvent the car like Pierre Gasly. And these are Dr. Marco's own words. And he also likes to overtake cars, which was another zinger of the day from the good doctor. And, you know, Dr. Marco has said that they will be making an announcement pretty soon, and it will involve all their four drivers. Obviously, Max is not going to get the chop, nor will Yuki Tsunoda. I think Pierre Gasly is a Grand Prix winner, so they should keep him. I think they should keep Checo, Sergio Perez. They're not going to find somebody who will rattle Max's cage, so just might as well keep somebody who can bring a lot of points and still do a good job. What say you?
I agree completely, but, you know, Albon is still in the mix. He's hoping to come back after winning a race in DTM last weekend. So everybody's excited. They want to come back, but I think they should just keep Checo. Pierre Gasly will have to eventually go to another team.
Yes, Pierre Gasly is not going to go back to Red Bull, and I don't think he should go back because, you know, as long as Max is there, you are cutting your own throat going there.
Absolutely.
Now we come to Yuki Tsunoda. Finally, he has realized he needs to calm down and control himself. Kid is very quick, won more races in Formula 2 last year than the championship-winning driver, Mr. Mick Schumacher. With Honda pulling out, it will be nice to see Yuki represent Japan in a very positive and fast way, which he is very capable of. I just hope he stops his abusive way of communication with his team on the radio, which I have been observing since his Formula 3 days, and I was very, very surprised. The first time I ever heard him on the radio was him telling his team, shut up. And you know how much effort is put in by members of the team to get you in a race car and drive fast. So there is no need for him to be Johnny Manziel of Japan, and that was tempura of the day. Over to you, sir.
Yes, he's sort of in trouble. I think he'll stick around for a little while, but you know, the potty mouth and the disrespectful mouth is hard to get that out of somebody's system. So we'll see what happens.
Yes, sir. Next, we come to the enigma of the season, Daniel Ricciardo. Spa is a man's world. The way things are going for the Honey Badger at McLaren against teammate Lando Norris, the smiling assassin needs a brand new bag of performance to get back in the race. I cannot believe the driver who went 3-0 against Seb is unable to match a driver who has yet to win a race in Formula 1. Where have all the flowers and powers gone, Danny boy? Are you still holding hope for Ricciardo like I am?
Nope. I think it's done. He'll have to move on or go back to Renault where he was comfortable. The McLaren is never going to suit him. It's going to be Hitco or Carbon Industries.
I don't know if this is a mental problem or just a lot of money in the bank or what has happened here. But, I mean, I was talking about Ricciardo getting a win this season. Once it was announced that he will get to... What I don't understand, this man got two podiums with Renault, and this is a much better car, and he is just going, traveling 101 south at 65 miles per hour, going deeper and deeper into a hole, so which is surprising. But let's see what happens at... I have a feeling that people at McLaren are now just beginning to lose interest in what's going on with him. Do you have the same feeling, sir?
Well, it's worse than that. You know, people forget that the constructor title is critical for all of the teams. And McLaren, if they lose out on a position because Ricciardo can't get to grips with the McLaren, that's going to hit them in the pocketbook, and they don't want to be hit in the pocketbook. So Ricciardo, by the end of this season, will be on thin ice, and he's going to have to perform next year. And if he doesn't, we may see him in the Camping World Truck Series.
Yes, and he loves Dale Earnhardt and number three, so that prophecy may come true. I don't think McLaren is paying him $25 million a season like Renault was, but I'm still showing he is above the minimum wage pay scale for Formula One. So he has to deliver soon before Zak Brown says, you know what, I have a car in... They're already talking about a third car for the McLaren-owned Arrows team here in IndyCar Racing. IndyCar Racing might become a hen house for Red Bull rejects. Okay, sir, Spa. Seven of the 20 drivers on the grid on Sunday have won at this track before. Not surprisingly, Lucky Lewis and Kimi have the most wins in that group, four each. Sebastian has won three times. So this is a little factoire and histoire on Spa right now, or the Belgian Grand Prix. One-hit wonders include Jenson Button, who won in a McLaren, not in his Halcyon days at Brawn GP. The aforementioned Daniel Ricciardo has won here, and so has Nico Rosberg in his championship-winning season, and Charles Leclerc when he won in 2019, and that was his maiden win. And you may ask yourself, where is my beautiful Max Verstappen? Well, Belgium is the land of his birth, because his mama is from there, and his best finish here has been twice on the podium in 2018 and 20, and on both occasions he was third. On paper, obviously, Sunday the race will be won by Max or Lewis. And have you looked at the rain forecast for Spa, Senor?
No, I did not, sir.
Okay, I have also not, but let's see what happens there. You know what happens at Spa when it's raining, and you've been there in the rain, right?
Terribly wet.
Yes, slippery when wet. Okay, sir, going back in time, Phil Hill from Santa Monica, California, won the race in 1961, and that was the year he also won the championship. The great Jim Clark took his first victory here in 1962, driving, of course, a Lotus, and two drivers won the race in their own cars. The Eagle flew with Dan Gurney in 1967, and the following year we had a Flying Kiwi in the Ardenne Forest with Bruce McLaren. And sir, my understanding is Dan Gurney's 67 Belgian Grand Prix winning car is at the museum here in Naples, Florida. I think it used to be called it was named after some guy, Briggs Cunningham Museum, I believe, but I think it's called the Rev Institute or something like that. And Naples, Florida is not too far, and one of these days I may take a trip there and check out this car. Last American success in the Belgian Grand Prix, sir, 1978, when Mario Andretti won the race at Zolder. Any comment you may have, sir, on the Belgian Grand Prix, past, present, or future?
Well, it was great. It's going to be great. It will always be great. As everybody knows, I was there in 1998 for the famous rain debacle and Schumacher getting mad at David Coulthard. But it's a great race every year. I look forward to it.
You know, talking about David Schumacher and Michael Schumacher and David Coulthard, you know, after emotions were very high, but I think the following race, a week or two after that, David Coulthard had a chat with Michael Schumacher about this, and that Michael just stood his ground. And so David Coulthard finally asked him, Michael, have you ever been wrong in your life? What do you think Michael said?
Never.
Exactly. So that's the way some people are, but, you know, to each his own. Okay, sir, now we come to cancellation corner. Japanese Grand Prix has been canceled, victim of COVID-19, coronavirus, Delta Dawn, or whatever you want to call that virus. But another cancellation that really pissed me off, because I used to watch this, have been for many years on the web and enjoyed it every year, is the cancellation of the Macau Grand Prix. So, very disappointing, and I guess, do you remember when we had the A1 GP series going on, which used to be after the end of the F1 season and most racing season globally?
I think Nico Hülkenberg is still waiting to get paid.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And, what a fun we had. Well, we had not met, but both of us were at the world-famous Laguna Seca race. And I will always remember the race, only race where there were more competitors than spectators, courtesy of all that cold weather we ever having in Northern California. Sir, I don't read French, but I read in a third-party source. Have you read this story? And this is coming from Le Journal de Montréal, the Montreal Journal. They are reporting that Toto Wolff and Lawrence Stroll are both under investigation over the purchase of Aston Martin shares. Toto bought about 30 million euros worth of shares in the car company a year and a half ago. But according to report, it is possible that the Austrian acted with insider information when acquiring a 0.95% stake in Aston Martin. The role of Stroll Sr., these are very good buddies, and this is also being looked into. And I cannot wait for the press conference with team principal, because I mentioned in the last podcast this journalist from racefans.net, Dieter Röntgen. He's a very good and reliable investigative reporter. And I've seen him ask some questions where people feel very uncomfortable, but he has the facts, so they cannot deny what he's asking, you know. So it will be interesting to see. And the Canadian authorities, I think it's called Federal Financial Supervisory Authority, transferred the case to the British Financial Conduct Authority for review. But you know how it is with people who have lots of zeros and a couple of numbers, digits that are not zero in their account. Remember when Bernie Ecclestone had almost went to jail over a bribery scandal involving a German bank and the sale of the bank stake? The case was in Germany. Do you remember that a few years ago?
Oh, yes.
I mean, you know, there was definitely bribe paid. And it was proven beyond doubt. And apparently the German law allows that if you reimburse the aggrieved party, you can avoid going to jail. So basically that's what Bernie did. Because for him to pay $300-400 million that's normally sitting in his piggy bank. So, membership in that high-flying club definitely has privileges and perks. What else we can talk here, sir? Toto Wolff, we talked about. What else would you like to discuss, sir, before we take our break?
Well, I think the Bottas-Russell situation is not going to pan out. I think that's going to be a big story. And I think Russell will be at Williams one more season. For me, that's the big story. Nobody's talking about it, but that's what's happening.
Oh, sir, shortly before I logged on, very briefly, I went to Facebook. Have you seen the posting by a gentleman here in Florida? We have another fan of, as he put it, El Machismo in Florida.
And he lives in Oviedo?
No, he does not live in Oviedo, but we would like to thank him and welcome him to the crazy world of F1 Weekly.
Absolutely. Yes, Tom Swenson, he mentioned us on Facebook. Welcome to the party, Tom, and you're going to love it forever. Why don't we take a quick break and we'll be back after these brief messages.
Honesty is something we all look for, especially when it comes to auto service. Honest Engines Auto Service Tallahassee is where you'll find it. Since 2005, they've been delivering trusted, dependable service to Florida's capital. Honest Engines is your full-service auto repair center. Bumper to bumper, they have you covered. Honest Engines Auto Repair offers a variety of services. Transmission repair, oil change service, and much, much more. Don't let just anyone work on your car. Bring it to Honest Engines. They'll give your baby the care it deserves. They work closely with you to make sure you know what's being done. With Honest Engines, you don't have to guess what their team is doing. Their highly experienced and certified technicians know just what your car needs, and they'll make sure you do too. So if you're in the Tallahassee area and you need auto repairs, give Honest Engines a call, 850-421-8461, and tell them F1Weekly.com sent you. Honest Engines Auto Repair, right on the corner, right on the price, 718 Gay Street, Tallahassee.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Yes, sir. Thank you. And, you know, of course, main event of the weekend was Le Mans. And, oh, what a feeling for Toyota. 1-2 at the famous 24, at the most famous 24-hour race in the world, I should say. And finally, number 7 Toyota wins with Kamui Kobayashi, who was driving when he took the checkered flag, Mike Conway, and Jose Maria Lopez. Mike Conway used to race here and had a very bad accident in IndyCar racing some years ago. Now, Jose Maria Lopez, the great driver for US F1 team, also known as Pachito, he becomes the second driver from Argentina after Jose Froline Gonzalez to win this race. So very good for him and the peeps of Argentina. Pedro Rodriguez is the third Latin American driver to take victory at Le Mans. So all very good. The second place Toyota hypercar was driven by Sebastian Buemi, the big Swiss cheese, Brandon Hartley, and Kazuki Nakajima. You remember Mr. Nakajima from his Williams days?
Of course.
The previous three wins by Toyota were by car number 8, which on two occasions featured Freddy, the fast one. F1 flavor, there was quite a bit of F1 flavor at Le Mans this year. Jan and Kevin Magnussen were teammates. Of course, Kobayashi raced in Formula 1, so did Buemi, Hartley. Paul Di Resta was in the race. Robert Kubica and two of our favorites, Monty and Fisico. Did you see what happened to Kubica's car?
No, but I was watching Kubica drive, and but there was some good dicing.
They were on their way to winning their class, but on the, I think at the start of the final lap, or just basically with the lap to go, they stopped. I'm not sure if they ran out of fuel or something happened, but heartbreak for the pole star. Okay, now interestingly, we're going to look at some drivers over the years with F1 pedigree. Nico Hülkenberg, as you mentioned his name earlier, he won Le Mans on his debut with Porsche in 2015. As I'm sure you know, Porsche is coming back, and then life will get very tough for Toyota and their drivers. But we like competition. Brandon Hartley has won this race with Porsche and Toyota, so that's good for him. Other winners include Michele Alboreto, the ex-Ferrari driver who lost his life in a Audi sports car crash in Germany many years ago, which was very, very sad. Scuderia Ferrari's numero uno from decades gone by, Tazio Nuvolari, one of the greatest names in the history of racing. He won the race in 1933, driving an Alfa Romeo. Man who gave Enzo Ferrari his F1 victory, Jose Froline Gonzalez, also gave him success at the Sarthe circuit in 1954. His teammate was the first French winner in Formula One, Monsieur Maurice Trintignant. Two Italian one-hit wonders, Ludovico Scarfiotti and Lorenzo Bandini, won this race in 1963 for Paisan Enzo. Bruce McLaren and Chris Amon won the famous 4-2 finish in 1966 for Henry Ford II. And the movie Ford vs. Ferrari is highly recommended. Have you seen this movie, sir?
Of course. Who would not go see this wonderful film? I mean, it's an interesting film, and Matt Damon as Carroll Shelby is hard to grasp and understand, but he does a pretty good job.
No, the movie is very nice, and I was so surprised. I was asked by my nephew, who does not follow racing, if I wanted to go and see this race, and, you know, when will I say no to anything which has the name Ferrari or Ford as far as motorsports is concerned? So if anybody has not seen this movie, I would highly recommend, and so will Mr. Rogers. Okay, moving forward or moving backwards, Pedro Rodriguez and Lucien Bianchi won three in a row. Pedro Rodriguez and Lucien Bianchi went three in a row for Henry in 1968. Lucien Bianchi was the grand uncle of Jules Bianchi. Fourth and final victory for Ford at Le Mans in 1969 were two Jackies, Jackie Ickx of Belgium and Jackie Oliver. The English Jackie went on to own Arrow's F1 team, and Mr. Brazier and I had the great opportunity of paying him a visit some years ago at his business in England. Okay, sir, American winners include, this is interesting, Luigi Canetti in 1949. He also won Le Mans as an Italian citizen in 1932. Very interesting. Maston Gregory in 1965 with Jochen Rindt. This was Ferrari's last victory in the French Classic, and the winning car can be seen at the Indianapolis Museum. Of course, very famous victory in 67 with A.J. Foyt and Dan Gurney. And the other American winners include, we already mentioned, Phil Hill, Carroll Shelby, Hurley Haywood, Bill and Don Whittington. Quite a story there off the track, which I won't get involved in right now. Another winner was Al Holbert. He was a Porsche dealer in Warrington, Pennsylvania, and was head of their IndyCar program when he was killed in a private plane crash in Ohio, I believe it was. Price Cobb and Davy Jones. Davy Jones was from upstate New York and used to race in British Formula 3 against Ayrton Senna. Okay, sir, now we move on to the other big event, the IndyCar race on Saturday evening in Gateway near St. Louis, Missouri. Did you watch any of the night action, sir?
No, I did not. I was too busy with NASCAR and other activities.
Oh, can you enlighten us as to who won the NASCAR race, please?
Well, I'm not going to get into it today, but it was an interesting race because I only watched two stages and I did not watch stage three. But the accident on the last lap after the checkered flag was a big, big bummer for your buddy Austin Dillon.
Yeah, you know, it's these stages that really, I lost interest in NASCAR, watching NASCAR, because of these stages. Stages are for rockets, not for motor racing. And I just don't like this hocus-pocus business of throwing cautions and, you know, what Nelson Piquet calls artificial excitement. But anyway, to each his own. Okay, sir, going back to the IndyCar race, Penske pilot and man from Tennessee, Joseph Newgarden, takes victory at the Gateway Oval. Victory number 20 of his career. Pat O'Ward, or Patricio O'Ward, is now on the Mexican radio after finishing second and going numero uno in the championship. Alex Palou was the championship leader going into this race, but he was stuffed in the wall through no fault of his own. Good or bad, I don't know, but his championship challenger and teammate Scott Dixon was also taken out in the same incident, and fingers are being pointed towards another young driver, Rinus VK from Netherlands. Our man Romain Grosjean was 14th. Final three races of the season are on the left coast, one in Oregon, one in NorCal at Laguna Seca, and season finale in SoCal, Long Beach. Do you have any plans to go to the IndyCar race at Laguna Seca, senor?
I will attend the Laguna Seca IndyCar race.
Oh, really? That's good. That's good. Okay, DTM, you already mentioned. Alexander Albon won race two from pole position in his Red Bull-sponsored Ferrari. So I am happy for him. And he has been making the rounds here at IndyCar races. And, you know, he's looking for some opportunity. And I hope he gets something, because things are going pretty good for several drivers who have crossed the pond. As long as you have talent, you will do well. Okay, sir, now we come to what I call Racing Roundup. Roundup is a well-known brand in the US as a weed killer, but this Roundup is about well-known drivers who were career killers. Their performance was very toxic to their teammates and made them all, to borrow a title from a song, sad, sweet dreamers. The seven deadly sins of Michael Schumacher and Lewis Hamilton made mincemeat of their teammates, even though they were FDA-approved grade one raw meat of talent. Now, Michael Schumacher, he had the luxury of having these people as his teammates. Jos Verstappen, Johnny Herbert, Eddie Irvine, Rubens Barrichello. Now, in any shape or form, does any of these people have any chance of beating Michael Schumacher? What say you, Mr. Rogers?
None had no chance. Michael Schumacher dominated. He was number one, period. Flavio made sure of that. And so did Ross Braun. And there was a reason for that, because he had killer instinct and did get seven world championships with different motors, unlike our current seven-time world championship. So Schumacher is really, he did it with Renault, he did it with Ford, and he did it with Ferrari. So pretty impressive.
Yeah, but you know, what you're saying is very true, and I have absolute high regards for all those achievements, not just by him. Anybody who gets to Formula One, I have deep regards for them. It's very hard. But you know, as far as you taking swipe at Lewis Carl Hamilton, let me just tell you, Michael Schumacher never had an Alonso-like talent as a teammate. He never had Kimi Raikkonen, who was very good in his era. He never had Alonso, never had Mika Hakkinen. And for a rookie to rattle the cage of the guy who dethroned Michael Schumacher, that's how I will always remember Lewis Hamilton. I'm not interested in his 7th championship, 8th or 9th championship, or 120 Grand Prix wins and 130 pole position. It's what he did in 2007. Now, I know you have deleted that from your memory bank, but one of these days I may have to visit you and we're going to watch a race together. And it could be any race of 2007 of your choice. This guy is special talent, senor. And talking of Lewis Hamilton, he also had the luxury of teammates like Kovalainen, Bottas, Nico Rosberg. And you know, all these drivers are very, very talented. You know, Rubens Barrichello had a tremendous junior Formula career. Nico Rosberg, man, I respect this guy, because I'm going to tell you something. If you ever look at the first 2005 GP2 inaugural season, halfway through the season, he was nowhere to be seen. He had no chance, but he came back to win. And Bottas did the same thing in GP3. And so, you know, these are not no slow pokes here. And then Alonso, your machismo, he had Fisico, Nelson Piquet Jr., Stoffel Vandoorne. Stoffel Vandoorne's junior Formula career as impressive as Lewis Hamilton, but against Nando, it was no go. And then also Nelson Piquet, he destroyed all his teammates. But then came his Waterloo moment. Benetton hired a young German as teammate to Piquet, and this time Nelson did not win. So, you know, everybody meets their match sooner or later. And of course, then we had your man, Monsieur Alain Prost, Le Professeur. He destroyed all his teammates. He won against Niki Lauda. Niki Lauda wrote about Alain Prost in his book, that no matter what he did, he could not beat the effing frog. So that's how talented Alain Prost is. But then one day, Mr. Rogers, the bottom fell out, and Professor had a teammate with a yellow helmet. And that was time to leave McLaren and go to a prancing horse. So there you have it, sir. Any thoughts on any domination of a driver that has impressed you over the years, sir?
No, I mean, I think 2007, there's a lot going on there. And to just say Lewis Hamilton was superior to Alonso, I think is false. And the management of the team and the way Ron Dennis was viciously anti-Alonso pretty quickly didn't help the situation. So I think 07 is a classic, because Kimi Raikkonen won the world championship. So, and we should be talking about Kimi more than Lewis and Fernando, who was just in a messy situation. I think Fernando, if the team was managed well, could have won the world championship that year and actually should have, and a lot of people would agree with me. But on the other hand, I stick to my guns. I think it's more exciting to watch Michael Schumacher win 7 championships in a Ford and a Renault and a Ferrari, Lewis only doing it in one motor. I'm sorry, but I like the trifecta, the illusion, maybe, to me, of being truly world champion because of the different motors. And hey, people have heard me blab about this before. It's not going to change. But keep up the good work, Nasser. Another outstanding.
Hey, I'm not finished. You're cutting me off, Boudreau.
Sorry, boss.
I don't want to get into an F1 filibuster, but when I say talk about 2007, I don't recall ever saying Lewis was superior to Nando or Nando was superior to Lewis. All I'm saying, a rookie rattled the cage of a guy who dethroned the Red Baron, which was an incredible achievement by both these drivers. And I'm only interested what happens between when the lights go off and the checkered flag comes. We're not interested in petulance and politics. One driver has pretty much cornered the market on that, but that's another story. We're just talking about pure racing talent. One thing I will say about Lewis Hamilton, which I think is very, very positive. You know, there are drivers, when they win a race, they make it look very easy. And that's what I see when Lewis wins a race. It's like Alain Prost. When Alain Prost won a race, he was not hustling and shoving and barging through people like Senna and Schumacher. I'm not saying he's better than them or they are better than the other, but there is a definite feel of smooth success with Lewis Hamilton. And he has driven for 2 different teams. The change of motors, it's just a fact. I mean, it's not like he had a Ford motor in a Minardi and a Renault motor in a Osella and he won. He won with the very best package. Everybody does. So we cannot hold that against or for any particular driver. But keep up the good work, Mr. Rogers. And you are right. A lot of people agree with you. I think 100% of the people agree with you in a country that's right next between Portugal and France. So congratulations.
Well, the thing is, nobody has said that Alonso was rattled in 2007, because if you're going to rattle somebody, you should win the world championship. And LCH didn't win the world championship in his rookie season. But the whole thing was unbalanced. We know that. Ron Dennis was totally for and pushing for Lewis Hamilton. The entire media press in Britain has always only rooted for Lewis Hamilton. And if you don't think Autosport is biased towards British drivers, I think that is insanity. All I've got to say is, I think Fernando is one of the greatest drivers on earth. And that's it. All I know is, if Fernando was in Mercedes for the same amount of years, I wonder how many championships he would have had. I don't care what anybody says. The dominance of Mercedes in the past, in the hybrid era, cannot be thrown under the rug. And the lack of machismo competition in teammates. I mean, I would like to see George Russell up against Lewis Hamilton. We don't see that for a reason. Toto has a deal. And Lewis has already said he wants to keep Bottas, and I wonder why. Why work harder when you don't have to? It's normal. Typical human instinct. But there you have it. That's my tip of the week.
Well, let me just tell you something about Ron Dennis wanting Lewis to win. And if Autosport is biased, it's understood. British media will be rooting for British drivers. French media will be rooting for French drivers. That's human nature, like you said. But as far as Ron Dennis trying to see Lewis win, this team is famous for letting their, there are two teams that are famous for this, letting their drivers fight it out. Williams, they lost a championship because the Frank Williams would not interfere. We saw what happened with Red Bull. Okay. No. But let me finish. Let me finish. Hold on, please. Going back to 1970s, this gentleman, Alistair Colville, who was from New Zealand and was crew chief to James Hunt, he is on record saying that anytime there are two drivers, okay, the team will automatically gravitate towards or lean towards the faster driver. And that's racing instinct and nature. That's what it is. And I think what has really happened here is somebody dropped off a 12-pack of Victoria Bitter on your doorstep today, and you just can't handle Lewis winning all these races, and Nando is stuck on DOS.
No, you're wrong. I don't care about... Lewis won so many races with no competition. If you can't believe that, all you got to do is look at the last 8 years. I mean, please, his teammates are pathetic. But on the other hand, Lewis Hamilton is the only driver that Ron Dennis picked up and put under his little wing since a child. Ron Dennis, if you don't think he was biased and pushed and put, he put Lewis Hamilton up against Fernando on purpose. It's classic. Let me tell...
Well, you know, Lewis Hamilton's... All his teammates have been championship-winning driver. Nico won GP2. Heikki Kovalainen was champion in World Series by Renault, which is, was a very strong series. And as a Renault man, you should know that. And Bottas is a GP3.
But you cannot... Are you telling me that Heikki Kovalainen is par with Fernando Alonso?
Absolutely not.
Thank you. The case is closed. A lot of people have a hard time saying Fernando is the greatest.
Fernando is definitely one of the all-time greats, no question about it.
And ask Lewis Hamilton why he didn't win in Hungary.
Well, I already know the answer. Why would I ask him?
Well, because that's the... How could an old man hold up such a fantastic, threatening, rattle-shaking man? How did he do that? It's not magic.
Well, you know what? Once upon a time, also in Hungary, Ayrton Senna was all over Thierry Boutsen, lap after lap after lap, and was unable to pass him. These things happen.
So that's it? No talent? It's just one of those things that happens? That's fine. I mean, I like all arguments. I think that's great. That's a good argument. I mean, but the problem is, it was Mr. Lucky Dog behind him. I mean...
If you put a guy like Lewis, or a guy like Alonso, if Alonso was in a Mercedes... I will have to agree with, I have no choice but to agree that he would have won probably same or even more races because he's that caliber of a talent. There's no question in my mind about that. But you cannot.
We have to remember the political climate that we're in. Fernando was blacklisted. It was all on purpose just because everybody is so sensitive. And if we can't admit that Fernando did not get the opportunity, certainly because... He burned bridges. I don't deny that. But to deny the talent and the people who watch Formula One, to deny them what we have been denied because time has gone by and he's 40 years old now and it's not going to happen anymore. But still, I think the political climate in the past 10 years was vicious to Fernando. And for him to survive through it and still be as competitive as he is unbelievably phenomenal. He could have just said, forget it, I'm not going to take the abuse. But he didn't. And look how wonderful he's still driving today. That shows that his talent is really, really, really honest. And that's it for me.
I have never met any racing fan who does not think Alonso is one of the great. And as far as political climate is concerned, well, you know what they say, Mr. Rogers, you make your own luck.
But that's the problem. All we do is... throw out cliches, but this is a man's life. This was a person's life and still is. And I don't think he was treated fairly. But nothing is fair in love and war. And, you know, he's a big boy. He can take it. And the best part, he has taken it. He's still in Formula One, still fighting for a win. I mean, he doesn't have the package, but he still has a good attitude. And I don't know about you, but LCH, when things go wrong at Mercedes, he gets a little whiny. There's a lot of crying. And don't get me wrong, GP2 engine, I understand. But that's how winners are, and I'm still going to be a Fernando fan till the end.
Oh, so that's how winners are, GP2 engine. So when Lewis cries, that's bad.
Of course, because I'm not a Lewis fan. I mean, that's what fans are all about. You protect your boy, your machismo. And that's what everybody else does. I know. Listen, it's all good for me. LCH is going to get number 8, so you should be quite happy. And now that I see we have a musical mondial, I think there's going to be dancing in the streets.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, we'll be running out of time, so I have a few more things. So let me just wrap it up, and then you can have some more pasties or whatever you want. Anyway, a moment in motorsports history. You got me excited, man, about motor racing, Mr. Rogers. Anyway, August 21st, 1991, a day that will live in F1 infamy.
On this day, the door was opened for Bertrand Gachot at a jail in England, and he had the pace and the mace. Thanks to English taxpayers, he got a few cup of tea, which opened the door for a Deutschen driver, and he served himself with 7 championships. That's the key word for today, 7 championships. Now here is a classic Eddie Jordan experience. At one time, Bertrand Gachot and his girlfriend, and I believe it was also at Spa, they were invited to the Jordan F1 team hospitality area. Later on, Eddie Jordan sent him an invoice for the coffee and Belgian waffles they had there. And this story is straight from the mouth of Bertrand Gachot. So that's the way things go sometimes. Okay, sir, August 23rd, the day we are recording, but back in 1987 on this day, Didier Pironi was killed in a boating accident off the Isle of Wight in England. So that was very sad because I followed his career with a lot of interest. He was on his way to becoming the first French world champion, and then he had his big accident at Hockenheim Ring in qualifying in the rain. So that's the way it goes. Okay, sir, to make you happy here, big race of the weekend was Le Mans. So here is some mighty fine music from the courtesy of Monsieur Philippe Sardes, who is the composer. And this is a tune from a movie, and the tune is called Martini Dry. Please enjoy. Thank you for listening. And please send some flowers to Clark Rogers. Bye-bye.
Thanks for the flowers, everybody. I'll see you at the Fernando Alonso Museum in Oviedo. Good night.